If you're looking for pro volleyball discussion, you came to the right place. My name is Dan. This is the 5-1 Volleyball Podcast. And on today's episode, we're going to go over the biggest news, the biggest stories, the biggest winners, the biggest losers, and the best performances from the past week in professional men's volleyball. There wasn't too much big news this week. Sam Daru made his return to Zaxa Jerzy Kozle, scored 16 points in his first game back against Katowice, so good job for him. He's a huge part of their team, probably their best player right now, or at least he was before the injury. Additionally, not all the time he missed was because of that injury. Some of it was because he was sick with the flu, so that added an extra week or two to the time that he missed playing for Zaxa. And he looked great in his return, as like I said, 16 points. Great to have him back. With him back, Zaxa, obviously the best team in the Plusliga, easily able to hang on to that number one seed going to the playoffs. And actually, we have, for sure, our six playoff teams in the Plusliga now, with Zaxa beating Katowice, put them firmly, completely out of playoff contention. So I'll just go over the six playoff teams briefly. I'll probably do a full podcast previewing the playoffs for the Plusliga at some point, probably do the same for Italy, and then maybe a combined one for Russia and Brazil. But for Poland, we have in first place Zaxa Jerzy Kozle, second place Warsaw, third place Jastrzębski Wigil, fourth place Radom, fifth place Zawrócki, and sixth place, they made the playoffs, guys, PG Skra Belchatov. They're actually really in danger of missing it, but they played really well down the stretch. Ibatabor, who we'll talk about later on this podcast, played really well. Grigor Lomash is doing a great job running that team. So good job to them for playing through a lot of injuries and really a poor performance at the start of the season to make the playoffs. As I've mentioned, if you've listened to my other podcasts, I've been hyping them up the past couple of weeks. But how it works in the Plusliga is that the first two teams get a bye. So that was actually pretty important for Warsaw to secure that second place. So Zaxa and Warsaw will get a bye in the first round, which means Jastrzębski Wigil will play Belchatov, which that sucks to have to play Skra as the third place team. You think the sixth place team in the Plusliga would maybe not be the strongest, but Belchatov is pretty much just about back to full strength. They're going to be a really tough out for Jastrzębski Wigil, and then for Dome versus Zawrócki, I'm guessing whoever makes it out of that series will just be cannon fodder for Zaxa in the second round. Zaxa with a pretty easy path to the finals, in my opinion. It's good to have Daru back, and he'll be able to ease himself into it and get a bit of extra rest because they will have a break before they have to play in the second round of playoffs. On the other side of the coin, Skra has a really difficult path, having to play Jastrzębski Wigil in the first round, and then if they make it through that, playing Warsaw in the second round. Both those teams are not pushovers, playing very well right now. And if we're going to have a repeat of last year's finals matchup, Skra versus Zaxa, I'd say it's extremely more likely Zaxa's going to get there than Skra, but we'll see. If they play like they did this week in the Champions League, then Skra will be fine. The eight teams in the Italian League are also 100% set. There's only 1 week left of regular season play in Italy, so there's not too much maneuvering that could still happen. So the eight teams that are making it for the Italian League playoffs: Perugia, Trentino, Civitanova, Modena, Milano, Verona, Monza, and Padova. So right now, the teams that are still competing for positioning, the main one is 4 and 5, Modena versus Milano, which really only counts for who gets home court in that first round series, which could actually be important. Modena, traditionally one of the most intense and passionate home crowds in the entire league. Milano, maybe a bit of a newer team, newer crowd, but still have a very nice stadium, and a lot of people are going to come out for the playoff game. Although recently, Modena has been getting booed by their own fans, but I'm sure if they start to win that playoff series, the tune of those fans will change very quickly. And then the other teams still competing for positioning. Padova could still technically play get above Monza if they win their next match 3-0 or 3-1 and Monza loses 3-0 or 3-1. And Monza is playing Trentino, who's been on fire recently, whereas Padova is playing Latina, who is guaranteed no playoff spot, but also guaranteed not to get relegated, so not a ton to fight for Latina. So there is a good possibility, actually, that Padova finishes ahead of Monza and will be able to avoid a first-round series with Perugia, who, I don't know, if I'm Padova, I do not want to play Perugia in the first round. Wilfredo Leon could win that entire series just on his serving alone. Perugia, definitely the best team right now, in the Super League, in my opinion, although it's not a huge difference right now. Trentino and Lube also looking pretty good recently. And then our last kind of jockeying for position area is Trentino in second place with 63 ranking points, and Lube Civitanova in third place with 62 ranking points. I don't think it'll matter too much between those two, but I'm guessing that playing Verona would be definitely a slightly harder matchup than whoever is in seventh place. So Lube Civitanova definitely going to go for that second spot. They're playing Valencia, who, despite taking Milano to five sets this weekend, still probably an easy 3-0 for Lube. But then Trentino playing Monza, definitely a harder matchup, and potentially their first round matchup if the seeding remains how it is right now. So anyway, last week of play in the regular season for Italy, so excited for those playoffs to start. It's going to be a really, really fun year. There's definitely a top group, as there always is in Italy, but I think the challenging teams in the bottom half of the bracket are actually a lot better than they traditionally have been the last few years. Monza, Padova, Verona, Milano, all those teams have great shots at maybe not winning a full series against the top teams, but I think some of these teams definitely have a chance to take a game of the series off of the good teams. And while we wait for those playoff series to start in Italy and Poland, we have the Champions League to look forward to, the second phase of the round of eight. They kind of play like, if you haven't watched the Champions League before, they play a home and home. So let's say Lube Civitanova and Dynamo Moscow are playing each other. The first match was in Moscow, which Lube won 3-2. So now they're going to go play in Civitanova Marche, where a win would guarantee that Lube advances to the next round. But theoretically, if Moscow beat them 3-2, which is the same thing that happened in Moscow, then we would go to a golden set, which is 1-15, winner take all, which are very exciting. The most recent one we had was in the CV Cup semifinals between Galatasaray Istanbul and Kuzbass Kemerovo. And man, those things are really exciting. I hope we see at least one golden set in the second phase of the round of eight in the Champions League. I mean, we had 3 5 setters, so there's a decent chance, but I mean, all the teams that won in five sets are also playing at home, so there's a good chance that they might all win 3-1 or 3-0, which means, or even 3-2 would mean that they're not going to a golden set. Anyway, hope you understood that. Go look up the rules on the CV website if that didn't make sense, but it's pretty straightforward. Basically, you add up the scores of the two games you played, and then if you tie exactly, you go to the golden set. On Tuesday, we also have the CV Cup finals between Trentino and Galatasaray Istanbul. Galatasaray was kind of underdog coming into this competition, definitely not a team that was expected to make the finals. Not a bad team. They've got Oleg Antonov, Canadian middle blocker Justin Duff, Oliver Veno, Yassin Aiden. So they've got some good players, but when you compare it to a team like Trentino, you can see there's a very deep talent gap between the two teams. I mean, Trentino, second place in the Italian league, the most competitive professional league in volleyball, so not a team to be taken lightly. I expect Trentino to win both games. Maybe they drop one set in each, but even that I highly doubt. But we've seen how big the Istanbul home crowd is. You know, they're going to show up in huge numbers. They have the really loud horns, they have the really loud drums, and the Galatasaray Istanbul women's team is no longer participating in the tournament either. So the crowds will really only have one team in town to watch, so you know they're going to show up in full force in support of their team, and maybe they can steal a game. You know, they were very much the underdog against Kemerovo as well, as I mentioned earlier. So that was already a huge upset. Kemerovo, the second place team in Russia, so not a pushover either. So if they can beat the second place team in Russia, you think maybe they have a shot against the second place team in Italy. Anyway, I'll talk more about the Champions League matches a little bit later on in the podcast, but this week, those are definitely the matches to watch. So catch some Champions League volleyball on Eurovolley.tv if you can. I'll be working the games on Wednesday. This week, Irvin Enkepet was in the news cycle a bit for some comments he made about Wilfredo Leon and playing for the Polish national team. If you don't know, Wilfredo Leon, the unarguably the best player in volleyball right now, in my opinion, definitely the best outside hitter in the world. He will be joining the Polish national team, definitely for the Olympic qualifiers. I don't think for Nations League, but I think for the Olympic qualifiers and for the Eurovolley Championships, Leon will be playing with Poland. Now you might be wondering why Leon, who is Cuban by birth, has played on the Cuban national team, has represented Cuba in international competition, is playing for Poland. Well, he actually has a Polish wife and child, so that is how he is a naturalized Polish citizen, despite, I believe, he has never lived in Poland. So this is a discussion that we've definitely had in volleyball before. I mean, we had an entire generation of some of the best volleyball players all coming from the same few age groups in Cuba. You know, that team that was second place at the 2010 World Championships with Wilfredo Leon, Yoandry Leal, Robert Landy Simon, Fernando Hernandez, and of course, Osmani Wantarena, who was a little earlier than that, but still in the same situation. And they all are not allowed to play on the Cuban national volleyball team anymore because they have played professionally in other countries. So now, of course, most famously, Wantarena playing for Italy. He was a naturalized citizen there just by virtue of having played in the Italian Super League and lived there for so many years. Wilfredo Leon is going to be representing Poland this summer. Yoandry Leal, I believe, will be representing Brazil this summer. Robert Landy Simon has desperately been looking for a team, but has so far been rejected by several national federations to play for their volleyball team. This is definitely a topic that has elicited a lot of strong emotional responses within the volleyball community among players and fans. And Irving Angapet, you know, never the guy to be soft-spoken. He was asked about the issue, to be fair. He's not giving an unsolicited opinion here, but he basically said that it's a little ridiculous that players from other countries are playing for their national team, especially when they have represented their original country on the international stage and, you know, in major tournaments. And he said, I would be very angry if I was a player from that country and then they brought in someone who's represented other countries for their national volleyball federations and then came to my team and took my starting spot. And the reference he gave there was Arthur Szalpuk, who did an incredible job helping Poland win the World Championship gold medal this summer as the starting outside. He said, well, most people think it's obviously going to be Leon and Kubiak because it's such a natural combination. Kubiak's one of the best outsides in the world, and Leon is the best outside in the world, so of course you're going to put those two together, relegating Szalpuk to a bench role. And Ingebet says he would be pretty mad if, I mean, he's the best, one of the best outside. He would never get benched on France, but he said maybe if he were in Shelpuk's situation, he would be pretty peeved. I think it's pretty tough to address this situation without talking about the larger context of people gaining citizenship to countries they did not grow up in. And I think what we have to remember about the Cuban situation is that all of these players would rather play for Cuba if they had the choice. It's not them who have decided to not play for the Cuban national team. It's the Cuban Volleyball Federation who decided that because these players are not currently living in Cuba, that they would not be able to play volleyball. So I definitely feel bad for them. I think they still have a lot of pride for their home country. I think they would rather play for Cuba than play for a different country. And they would rather play all together because I know a lot of them are still very close. And I think that Cuban team would have won at least a one Olympic medal, probably several, and probably a gold if they had managed to stick together and Cuba let them play for their country of origin. On the other hand, I think there is some validity in the fact that just giving citizenships to athletes kind of cheapens the value of it, especially for people who maybe have been trying to get that citizenship through more traditional means for a number of years. The immigration process for a lot of countries is quite difficult, so it would probably be frustrating and unfair to those people that an athlete gets citizenship to a country just basically by asking to be a part of their national team, which is also not really what these guys did. Leon obviously has a Polish wife and a child, and Wantarena lived in Italy for many years, speaks the language very well, and same thing with Yoandry Leal in Brazil. I'm not sure I'm a huge fan of the argument that Angapet uses, though, which is that if I was a player of that country's team, I would be very angry that someone had taken my starter spot. And I don't think that's the best argument because it could very well just have been some younger, better player from your own country. I think, you know, you should always try and strive to be the best. And if someone takes your starting spot, you know, if you're playing club volleyball, the club could just pay for a way better player and your starting spot could be gone. Nothing is guaranteed in sports. It's one of the purest forms of meritocracy we have, or at least theoretically it is. And so I don't really like the argument that Szalpuk should be really mad at the Polish Volleyball Federation for bringing in Leon. And also, Szalpuk, I'm sure, will still get plenty of time and opportunities with the Polish national team. He's a fantastic player, still very young, even younger than Leon. And also, Leon just improves the chances that Poland is going to win. They could potentially be looking at 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 or even 8 years all the way up until Paris 2024 of just complete volleyball dominance, which I'm sure he'd rather have 2 Olympic gold medals than the starting spot, or at least that's how I kind of view him as a person. And most players, I think, would rather have the medals rather than the starting spot. Anyway, I'm interested in hearing what you guys have to say about this. It's definitely not an easily answerable question. I don't feel strongly about it either way. I understand that there's definitely a lot of valid points on both sides of the argument. If there's probably more than 2 sides of the argument too. There's a lot of different viewpoints you could take with this. I want to hear what you guys think though. It's a really interesting discussion that goes well beyond volleyball, and I want to hear your thoughts on it. All right, now we are done talking politics for today. So why don't we give some props to our winners of the weekend. Our first winner of the weekend is going to be Milad Abatapour, outside hitter for Skra Belchatov from Iran. And he is a winner because he just got a 3-year contract from Skra Belchatov, one of the top clubs in volleyball in the Champions League, current reigning champions of the Plusliga. And he deserves every bit of praise. He carried them while everyone else was injured. Abatapour stayed healthy, helped out the team, and just has been playing and doing an awesome job with Skra this season. I can't say enough good things about him. And getting that 3-year contract is huge, provides a lot of financial stability in his life, doesn't need to worry about his contracts or money for another few years. And it's a great sign for volleyball in general. The contracts in volleyball tend to be very short, 1 or 2 year deals, because, you know, to be honest, there is a lot of financial instability with a lot of these clubs. They can't really afford to give out big contracts for multiple years for star players. So they tend to do 1 or 2 year deals as their financing and budget is going to be changing every year. But not for Skra Belchatov. They're a very storied franchise in Poland. You know, they clearly have access to resources and sponsors that are stable and going to be with them for a long time. So it's a good thing for the players who now are able to get longer contracts and not have to worry about finding a new club and a new contract every year. So Milad Abatapour is a winner for getting the bag, and we're all winners. Volleyball is just a winner for longer contracts and more financial stability. But he is just a runner-up. And our second runner-up for winner of the week, Trinity Western Spartans, for winning the Canadian College Volleyball Championships. I've probably said this before, but if you don't know, Canadian men's college volleyball is pretty much just as good as NCAA Division I volleyball. I think that's pretty much the only sport where that is the case. Maybe curling, maybe skiing. I don't know if those are D1 sports, but we'd probably be pretty good at those as well. Trinity Western is the college program in North America that produces the most pro volleyball athletes. It's actually not a college in the States. It's Trinity Western from Canada. They have produced guys like Stephen Marshall, Lucas Van Berkel, Daniel Jansen Van Dorn, Rudy Verhoef, Ryan Sklater. So a lot of current Canadian national team members are alumni of this program. And over this weekend, they took down the Brandon Bobcats of Manitoba in 3 sets. So a really dominating performance by Trinity Western. And the main player, a guy who I've talked about on the podcast before, if you listen to my Best Prospects in Volleyball podcast, this guy was near the top of the list. And that's Eric Lepke, who is also the tournament MVP in this, the Canadian College Nationals. He put on a great performance, served really well, attacked really efficiently. He looked like by far the best player that was on the court pretty much at all times. But Trinity Western also has guys like Jacob Kern, Pearson Ashenko, Jackson Howe, Brody Hofer, and Derek Epp, all guys who are likely future professional volleyball players. And if you don't know, Canada's going through a very big talent improvements. Our youth programs are doing very well over the last few years. So those are all guys you may want to keep an eye on as in terms of who's going to be a good professionals in the future. But while Trinity Western and Abatapour had great weekends, I think SESI Sao Paulo in the Brazilian League has the most to celebrate about as they take the first seed from Santa Cruzeiro. The first time that anyone's taken the first seed from Santa Cruzeiro in about half a decade. So well done. Cruzeiro traditionally just completely dominates Brazilian volleyball, but this year, Sao Paulo beat them 3-0 in this the last week of the regular season and secures the number one seed for the playoffs, which is a pretty big advantage in Brazil because those crowds get absolutely wild. Recommend checking one of their games out if you have not seen a professional Brazilian game before. So I know not all of you guys are familiar with all the teams and players in the Brazilian league. Kind of tough to keep tabs on, at least compared to Italy and Poland. But Sao Paulo has guys that played on the Brazilian national team, like William Arjona, obviously the backup setter there right now and former starting setter, Eder Carbonera, Lipe, Alan Souza. And strangely enough, if you've never seen this before, Murilo Andres plays libero for them. The guy I want to focus on the most, though, is Alan Souza, who you might not have heard of, actually, but he is an absolutely incredible opposite. Only 24 years old, been a part of the Brazilian national team for a number of years, but usually as a bench player because Brazil has Wallace starting, and then Evandro, who's still playing well at like 39 years old. Like, full credit to Evandro, but I think it might be almost time for Alan Souza to get his due on the Brazilian national team because the guy has been just having an incredible season. He's hyper-athletic, hits the ball just amazingly, jumps out of the gym, puts up a huge block, has definitely learned a thing or two from Wallace because they actually do play fairly similarly. And in this game where they crushed Santa Cruzeiro, 14 for 25, hitting 56%, but then 19 points with 5 blocks on the match. So you can see what a force he is blocking opposing outsides as well. So Alan Souza, definitely a name to watch out for. Big reason for Sao Paulo's success this season. They are my winner of the weekend for getting that number one seed over Santa Cruzeiro. Taylor Sander did everything he could to prevent the loss with 13 for 22 hitting and also an ace and a block. But the rest of the team didn't do quite enough to get Santa Cruzeiro that first seed, because they're in second place. They would have had it if they won this game. This game was actually, we rarely get that where the last game of the regular season decides the seed between first seed between number one and number two. But exciting match. Congrats to Sao Paulo. Alan Souza, name to watch out for. As for our losers of the week, our runners-up is a three-way tie between Perugia, Lubici Vitanova, and Zenit Kazan. And the reason why they're losers of the week is, first of all, because they got taken to five sets by much less talented teams who are just outworking them. But second of all, because they got taken to five sets and then they all won the fifth set. At least let the underdog team win the fifth set. So first of all, they can get the fulfillment and excitement from beating a Lubici Vitanova or Zenit Kazan. And also so that the next round in the home phase of the better team is more exciting. I know you're just going to beat them 3-0 or 3-1, and all this excitement is going to be for nothing, but at least if you lost the fifth set, it would just make things that much more exciting. It would give me a bit more hope. But now the next round is likely going to be just a stomp for the home teams, but I guess I did say that for the away phase of the round of eight as well, so we'll see. But guys, this is not how you script volleyball. It's supposed to be a little bit more exciting. If the underdog takes you to a fifth set, they're supposed to win it, especially in that Perugia-Chaumont game where Chaumont had chances at match point. And the game that I predicted would be the closest, which is Skra Belchatov versus Zenit St. Petersburg, ended up being a 3-1 victory, once again proving that my prediction curse that started in the World Championships has just continued since then. But the biggest loser of the week from March 11th to March 18th, I think you guys might be able to guess who they are. They've been on my loser of the week every week since I started this format. And that they're finally, this is going to be their last one, I promise. And it's Siena of the Italian Super League, guaranteeing their relegation for the season with a 3-1 loss to Monza on Saturday. And this was not Monza's best match either. They hit only 45% for the match, 10 errors, 7 blocked attacks. But those numbers are even worse for Siena, with 12 errors and 9 blocked attacks, and 23 service errors, which is what really did them. 5 each for Fernando Hernandez and Christian Savani, 4 for Yuri Gladger and Gabriele Mariotti. So, tough way to lose. This has been kind of the story of the season for them. At least In fairness, this one did not go to five sets, and they did not lose in five sets, but a record 10 losses in the fifth set this season. One of the most unclutch sports teams I have ever watched in my life. Siena had all the talent in the world. I still look at this team, and like they have good players on the team, but a lot of them are going to take a bit of a reputation hit for this season because, I mean, how can you not when you have a team like this and you get relegated in the Italian Super League? I mean, look at who the teams are ahead of them. I mean, no offense to Sora and Valencia, but see, there's no way those two teams should be playing in the Super League ahead of Siena, but that's the way it's going to be. There's got to be a book written on team building as a result of this. Hopefully we can learn something from this. Hopefully Siena can learn something from this and bounce right back to the Italian Super League, because I think they had an owner who was willing to spend money. They had a good social media team. They were doing things very professionally. They have a good home crowd. But I think this season turned out even worse than they could have possibly hoped for. And for that, they are the loser of the week. And I'm not going to mention them anymore. They're done. And we're going to find a new loser of the week next week. So you don't have to worry about Siena anymore. And now our last segment of the podcast, performance of the week. And we had several very good performances in this week of volleyball. Firstly, I'm going to go with a setter because I feel like I always fall into the classic trap in volleyball and always give all the awards to outsides and opposites. So I got to give props to my guy Antoine Brizard. Only scored 1 point in the match against Jastrzebski Vigil, but he led his team to 54% team hitting, only 3 attacking errors in that entire performance, and also managed to get his middles 11 for 16 on kills, which is very impressive. I mean, Vigras and Verona are pretty easy to set in the scheme of things, but still, good job to Brizard, kind of tearing apart the defense of Jastrzebski Vigil, which is a very good team, maybe not the best blocking team, but they just could not handle Brizard's hands, and I wish this guy had his own national team to take care of, because it sucks that he has to sit on the bench all summer behind Tony Udi. He's an extremely talented setter, and I'm glad he gets a chance to show his talent with Warsaw. Our next player is Kamil Rychlicki. Haven't heard from him a ton recently. Ravenna's kind of fallen off a cliff in terms of the Italian League standings. After they were close to making the playoffs, they're now well out of it. But Kamil Rychlicki still had a really good game this match. 23 for 45 hitting. That's a huge set load. 54%. 3 aces, always been a really good server. And then 1 block to complement that. Unfortunately, a 5-set loss to Padova. But, you know, Ravenna, just out of the playoff race. I think if they continue to grow with this group of players, especially if they manage to keep Rychlicki, then they definitely have a chance of making the playoffs next season. Now, I actually have another runner-up just because there's another performance I wanted to highlight, and that's Maciej Muzaj, another high set load opposite, 26 for 41, 63% hitting, and 1 block against Zenit Kazan. They have a ridiculously talented defensive team, especially in the back row, but Muzaj was seemingly scoring on command. And I gotta say, I watched this full game. Probably 10 of those shots he didn't score on were like almost impossible to hit. They were pretty much trying to find him on every possession. Zenit Kazan was clearly game planning to take him out of the game, trying to get triples on him whenever possible. But if Muzaj had the ball in a good place, he was scoring every time. It was a very impressive performance to watch from him. Hopefully he gets some looks from the Polish national team. Damian Schall is not having the best season, so maybe Maciej Muzaj can slide into the DMs of Vital Hanen and get a spot on what is likely going to be a very successful Polish team this summer, because he deserves it. Serving wasn't too great during this match. That's the one thing with Muzaj I'd really like to see him get better at, but the attacking is just... He's a must-watch player this year. He's incredible. But not quite as incredible as my performance of the week. Jor Grozier, 21 for 39 hitting, 54%, 23 points, so 2 of those points came from blocks. You might be thinking, Dan, why is this performance of the week? 21 for 39, decent, but not as good as Muzaj, 26 for 41, and against the worst team. He's playing a kind of random team in the Russian Super League. However, what if I told you this performance came in 3 sets, a 3-0 victory, not a particularly long one either. Grozier had 23 points. And actually, his 11 points in the third set is a Zenit St. Petersburg record. So round of applause for Mr. Grosjer. I think his start to the season was quite overrated, but he has turned it on. Clearly one of the best hitters in the Russian league, which is a very competitive league to be one of the top hitters in. Good job for him. Unfortunately, did not get the win against Maciej Muzaj when they played in the Champions League. Still have a chance, you know? They either have to beat Belchatov 3-1 and then play a golden set, or just do it the easy way and beat them 3-0 at home. Unfortunately, Oriol Comejo is dealing with some injury issues right now and might not be available to play in the Russian League playoffs or the Champions League playoffs, so that's unfortunate. Comejo, arguably their best player, him and Grosjer are definitely by far the top two guys on that team, so it's tough to compete without a guy that's that important, and we're seeing that with that loss to Skrbel Belchatov, but Grosjer doing the best he can to put the team on his back and win pretty much by himself. So that's going to be it from me today. We've got some exciting volleyball this week going on with obviously all the Champions League and the CV Cup matches. I hope you guys check that out on Eurovolley.tv. Probably do a podcast detailing what happens in those maybe on Thursday. We'll see though. I haven't quite planned out which podcast I'm going to do during the week, but you guys can be sure there's going to be a good one coming. Remember to check out the YouTube channel, 5-1 Volleyball, the Instagram at 5-1VB, always posting the best highlights pretty much as they happen or right after the game. So remember to check that out, give that a follow, and subscribe to the podcast if you enjoyed it. Tell your friends, tell your teammates, tell anyone who's, you know, thinking about, hey, I kind of like volleyball. Is there a pro volleyball that exists? How do I follow it? How does it work? Oh, tell them. Check out the 5-1 Volleyball podcast on Spotify, iTunes, Podbean, or what? I'm sure I put it on everything, so I'm sure they can find it somewhere. Anyway, guys, thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week.